Welcome, everybody, to Broadcast Team Alpha, where we bring you cutting-edge conversation while exploring the quantum possibilities. And we're going there again tonight. We're so going there again tonight. We have a very exciting guest. But before we get started, I want to invite you to a little bit of excitement of our own. Broadcast Team Alpha now has a membership community. It's just beginning to build. The first 10 people who sign up for the membership community get a copy of Augie's book. Please be patient with us. The few people that have already signed up, be patient with us. We're coming. We're just waiting for a few more people to join the party. So Mac will put the link in the chat for tonight. And whenever you go to our YouTube page, you'll see the link to join us. And it's going to be different. You know, it's going to be a more interactive and intimate forum. You know, right now, YouTube is, we put shows there, you watch shows, we get to talk a little bit in the chat, but it's going to be more interactive. Augie and I are going to set up dates for you to come meet us in personal meetings, have Q&As. We're going to test pilot some things with the people in our membership community. You know, Augie and I have a few things that we've experienced that we're not sure that we're ready to put out for public consumption. So we're going to, you know, we're going to test pilot with our intimate community in the back room, so to speak. So I hope you'll join us. Augie, tell us about our guest.
Yes. Oh, I've been looking forward to this one because we have L.A. Marzulli with us. And I know that this could be a very short introduction because most of the people out there, they already know him because of his books and his shows and his TVs and his movies and everything. And before I go into saying a little bit about him, I want to make sure that you understand where his website is, because a lot of people like to surf the website as they are listening. And you definitely need to go and visit this website because there is so much research and books material, and you could probably lose yourself in it. So about a week or so later, you'll surface somewhere. And that website is lamarzulli.net. And for some of you out there, I'm going to spell that. lamarzulli.net. So you got that one. Now let me say just a few things about him here for those three of you out there that don't know him already. And L.A. Marzulli is an author of 12 books, including the Nephilim trilogy, which got him actually the CBA bestseller award. And he, based on his trilogy, he also wrote, yeah, there you go, 13 books. Oh, boy, oh, boy. Now, you got to update your bio.
I do.
Okay. All right. Because of that trilogy, though, he got the honorary doctorate from Pacific International University. His book series, On the Trail of the Nephilim, Volume 1 and 2, are in full color and show the absolute physical evidence of the existence and how they were and how they lived, the tall ones. Hey, there you go. Those are some of the rocks that we can't move today, but they did 2,000 years ago. And he also created the Watchers series films. And that grew into 11 episodes, and Watchers 7, UFO Physical Evidence, is going to be really interesting if you go look at that one, because there it is, disclosure again, all over, that a lot of people seem to ignore. And that also gave him the People's Choice Award. Now, that is a very credible and high-profile award that is only issued to a few people. He has now also created a new series, The Watchmen Chronicles. That is geared towards the absolute skeptics out there. And the evidence here will wipe the skeptics out. They are so much more beyond that, but I want to hear from him too. He's a sought-after speaker and just on absolute every media out there, radio, TV, and you name it, he's there. So this will be exciting. Welcome to the show, LA.
Hey, thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. Wow, phenomenal. That book looks amazing. That's a
There's actually three books in that. There's Omnitrail 1, Omnitrail 2, and Nephilim Hybrids. There's like three books compiled under one because it was just way too much. It's actually cheaper to print it that way, and that's what we did it. So it's kind of you get everything at the get-go. But yeah, it's a lot of work. I've been all over the world. You know, Graham Hancock, switching gears, hats off to Graham. He's got a new series. I watched the first episode on Netflix. And, you know, Graham was on the trail long before I, you know, took up the mantle, as it were. But a lot of it's obviously a first class budget. I mean, it's huge. I don't know who's producing it, but there's some big bucks behind it. And he was at Nag Magdal and another couple of sites I had never seen before. I knew about Nag Magdal, but not the other one that he was at. But he's on the trail. The difference between us is the only difference between us, really, that I can see. We both realize that there's a hidden history that's been obfuscated from the peoples of the world, that we're not being told the truth, that all this is just, you know, completely swept under the rug. And when you find something that goes against the existing paradigm, it's like, well, you know, you're not an archaeologist, so you just have to shut up and sit on the back seat. I'm not buying that at all. So, you know, we're both plowing in the same field. The only real difference is I look at everything from a supernatural worldview. I don't believe that these are mortals that are doing what we see all around the globe, like those huge megalithic stones that I just showed you from Omnitrail of the Nephilim found in Cusco, Peru. And I've been there numerous times. And every time I'm there, I'm just blown away. You can't duplicate that technology today. You can't. Now, you can do a small wall. But, you know, with lasers and cranes and computers and all this stuff, well, they don't have that thousands of years ago. And we don't know how it was done. And we still don't know. But when you go down there, it's hysterical because you'll hear the docents from Peru who are, you know, who are just parroting the basically the narrative that they're told to parrot. The Inca were master stone builders. It's such nonsense. It's absolute balderdash poppycock, if I can use those words.
Way before and, them.
Yeah, I mean, let me just show you one thing. It's just, get a close-up here. Because when you look at it, this is a perfect, I showed you this picture before. So here, I'm wrestling with this book. Oop, the page turned. Okay, now here it is, right here. So look at this, and you'll see three different types of stonework here. You'll see the original right there, yeah. The megalithic, which is absolutely pristine. Next to it is the Inca slop, and you'll see that, just head-sized boulders. Does it look anything like this? Absolutely not. And then over here, you'll see the colonial.
Wow.
So you've got three different types of builders. And
those stones right there, what are the weights of them? Have they figured that out?
Oh, yeah, there's some of them. Those are smaller. Those are like 10 tons, 8 tons, smaller than that. But the ones at Sacsayhuaman are 100 tons. And you remember, in the Neolithic, you know, you go back 4,000 years ago, when they don't have, you know, they don't have cranes or diamond saws or any of this stuff. I mean, it's just not there. And this gives you an idea. Let me just show you this. This is Sacsayhuaman, and one of my favorite pictures is Irene, Brian Forrester's wife, with her hands on the wall, which is right. Let me see, where is it? Mm-hmm. So there's a distance, and it just gives you an idea of what we're looking at, and it's hysterical because when you're there, you get these goofy docents, which are trying to tell us that there's a Rene, give you an idea of the size. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're put together with such absolute precision, as Brian used to say, or still says, you know, you can't even put a piece of paper. You can't. I mean, they're absolutely precise polygonal shapes. And again, hats off to Graham Hancock. I mean, he talked about that before I even knew about it. He had been down there and explored it. So, you know, and we're the same age. We're both 72. So, but I came into the game a little later.
Yeah, what about the theory that I have that maybe when they made these stones, they had them softened because the shapes of them are triangular and all fit together so strangely that what if they had softened the stones to fit them together?
We've talked about the same thing. Brian and I have talked about that. Other people, that's the first place most people go, that maybe they're somehow softened and melted and they, whatever the technology is, and we don't know. I mean, if we're honest, we can only, you know, it's just conjecture on all of our parts because we don't know. But whatever this machine was that did this, or whatever the mechanism was, it can't be duplicated. And the guys who did it took the tools with them. I mean, you know, archaeologists, which just cracks me up. Okay, we've got copper chisels. And we had a guy in Norway, it was just, he bought a slab of andesite stone, which is all this, all the rock here is andesite. It's number 7 on a Mohs hardness scale, 10 being a diamond. So he's got this little slab of andesite stone, and he's got a copper chisel. And he shows you the copper chisel, and it's nice and sharp. And he puts the copper chisel down. I'll use a prop. He uses the copper chisel and puts it down on the andesite and takes a hammer and goes, tink, one time. And then he shows you the end of the chisel, and it's totally blunt. It's like totally blunt. It's completely, utterly useless. But they just keep repeating the same lie over and over and over again. And I get incensed. I have to be really careful because I can get really just, you know, quit lying to us. Stop lying to us. We're all sick of it. You guys don't know what you're talking about. You're dishing out nothing but a lot of hooey, and we've had it up to here. Just be honest and tell us that you have no flipping idea how this thing was made. The Inca didn't do it. Just stop lying. That's all I ask. Just stop lying. I'm so sick of it.
Why do you think it's hidden from us? Why do you think?
Because I think it's like Planet of the Apes movie, which is a perfect example. Don't go to the forbidden zone. You know, it's just like, it's the forbidden zone, and off you go, and you find out that, oh my gosh, there's the Statue of Liberty. It's the same type of thing. It points to something that happened. I think it points, in my opinion, it points to a supernatural worldview. And because the entire planet, the entire scientific community, the academic community believes in the Darwinian paradigm, they don't believe in the supernatural. Now, there are people within that paradigm that do believe in the supernatural, but they keep their mouth shut. They don't say anything because they can't. Because if they do something, they're in jeopardy of losing their job, because the whole academic community, I mean, you go to any, you know, nobody will even talk about the supernatural. It doesn't exist. It's just Darwinism. It's just mindless evolution over billions of years of just mindless evolution. Just tell me then, how does the woman's reproductive system evolve so we can reproduce the species? It's like, you know, over billions of years, somehow, oh, got it wrong again. Oh, we don't know what we're making, but we're doing something. Oh, we can't even do that because evolution's mindless. It can't talk or speak. It just kind of does things. Well, the neo-Darwinists know that when they look at the DNA, the deoxyribonucleic acid, the double helix of life, the spiral of life, this is the name of our company, by the way, that this is a complex genetic code. It was created somewhere. It just didn't come from some kind of primordial slime because it's so exact. I mean, look at us. You know, this all works, right? My arm only grows to a certain length. It doesn't keep growing, all in proportion. Now, there are genetic anomalies. I get that, and things happen. But for the most part, here we are in these little three-dimensional biological body suits. You know, this is my body, but then my soul, my soulish nature has, let's say, the gift of composition, the gift of speaking, or the gift of flying a kite or flying an airplane. I mean, those genetic dispositions happen because we have souls. And then we have a spirit being inside of us. Most people, that spirit being never gets activated. And so they walk around in a very soulless state the whole time. And that's a 3-hour conversation.
Go back 1 minute. How would you define soul, please?
The soul is our emotions, our genetic makeup from our ancestors, our soulless nature, our emotions, the way we deal with life, our giftings, the giftings that come genetically down through the line, that those are all soulish. Our proclivity to love, our proclivity to hate, our proclivity to forgive or not forgive, all that is in our soulish nature. And a lot of it is inherited, which is why in order to really get free, one has to go back and realize that the generational stuff gets passed down. The good stuff I want, the bad stuff, not so much. So we go and we do the work with the generational stuff. And I just pray and say, no, it stops here. It's not passed down to my kids. It's not passed down to me. And that's where the supernatural comes in, because I can't change that. But there's somebody that's a lot higher and greater than I am that can. And so he just goes poof. sometimes, you know, you feel something and sometimes you just don't, but you realize, wow, I'm not thinking that way anymore. That's really cool. Thank you.
And then you're saying that for many people, the spirit doesn't get activated. Can you explain more of that? Talk more about that?
I was deeply involved in the New Age. I went to Woodstock. Unlike our President Clinton, I inhaled as deeply as possible. Okay. I took multiple LSD trips, magic mushrooms. I had spirit guides. I was with a guru for 3 years, Guru Maharaji. Third eye opened. I meditated. I had spirit guides. I flew around the universe. I astral projected. Did it all. Okay. And at the end of the day, I was still the same schmuck I had always been. Nothing had changed. Nothing had changed. It's like, here I am in the ashram meditating, you know, doing everything right, and I'm still the same guy. What's going on here? But I've had all these supernatural experiences. So what's going on? So I become agnostic from probably 25 to 30. It was like a 4 or 5 year stint there where I just kind of went, well, if there's a God, I can't find them. I give up. I don't want anything to do with this. And I just, leave me alone type of deal. And I'm reading this book. I started searching again at 30. And I was, you know, reading a lot of books and stuff, and Taylor Caldwell and this one book, Kingdom of the Cults by David Hunt. And I'm reading this book. I'm going, yep, tried that. Yep, looked into that. Oh, I know that one. Oh, I was immersed in this one. You know, Carlos Castaneda, Mind Quest, Vision Quest. I was there. I mean, I lived all that, right? And, you know, spirit guides and stuff coming at me and all this stuff. So at the end of the book, there's this goofy little prayer, you know, to give your life to Jesus. And I'm kind of going, oh, no, you know, it's like, here we go. So I'm alone in my room. There's nobody going, and if you call right now, there's none of that going on. I'm alone in my room. I'm just reading this book. And I have, you know, I was raised Catholic. So it's like, you know. And I go, it's a real simple thing. I just go, I'm just go, okay, if you're real, come into my life. That's all I said. There's an invitation. But, you know, it's like he stands up a door and knocks, but you've got to invite him in. And that's a universal cosmic rule, by the way. You have to invite it in. It's like the old vampire lore thing. There's a threshold covenant. You have to invite the vampire in. He just can't walk in. The same thing with demons. You have to invite the demon in. You have there's protocols here. Absolutely, these cosmic protocols. But they just can't barge in. You've got to invite them. So I invited him in. I said, okay, if you're real, come into my life. And I sat there like this. Nothing happens. Nothing happens for like a month. And then all hell breaks loose.
Nothing happens yet.
Nothing happens yet. And then a month later, literally all hell broke loose. And the woman I was living with promptly fled the house after like a week of that. She couldn't handle it. Who could? I thought I was being hit with such demonic forces. Wow. And I had no defense. No way of stopping the thoughts, no way of defending myself, didn't know how to do that. And within 24 hours of that that being dragged out of the kingdom of darkness, I had my first spiritual mentor, Wayne Kendall, and I was at this pastor's office talking to him about all this stuff. And it was very intense for like 3 years, extremely intense.
Why did that happen? I mean, if you invited Jesus into your life, why suddenly was there abundance of evil or darkness?
Well, because I was living in the kingdom of darkness and didn't know it.
They were
dragging me out of the kingdom of darkness, and the kingdom of darkness did not want to let go. Yeah, so there was a war going on, and I didn't know how to defend myself. That wouldn't happen until 3 years later.
Wow. Yeah. I when I knew you were going to be on the show, I was looking at some of your YouTubes, and I noticed you had some things on exorcism there. And curious
yeah. about that. Yeah, we've. I'm not an exorcist. I don't really engage in the deliverance ministry. But recently I had someone call up and full-blown manifestation, full-blown. Gateway, portal opening up, stuff happening, watch out to the car. The car's covered in thousands of flies. Who's the Lord of the flies, right? I mean, there it is. Like the whole deal, entities appearing, I mean, the oppression, the whole thing. And, you know, I prayed with this person and, did what I was supposed to do, told her what she should do. And then at the end of that, I had a word. I had like a word of knowledge. And someone in the house was watching horror films, which acted as the gateway. There's that covenant. There's the covenant. You know, there's the permission. Here's the threshold. You can't come in, but if I give you permission, then you can. And so by watching some of these things, and some of these things are incredibly graphic, they're demonic in every way, they're just disgusting, they open the gate. They open the gate.
Phenomenal. So how did you get onto the trail of the Nephilim? Let's go back to that. What inspired you? I mean, were you just like so mad because you know there's more going on than they're letting us know? And how did that happen?
No, that would come much, much later. The idea of being ticked off at everybody. This is the book that changed my life by Dr. I.D.E. Thomas. It's a reprint. And I actually, The Omega Conspiracy. And I actually wrote the foreword. I wrote the foreword to it, which was an incredible honor for me. Here I am writing the foreword to the book that changed my life by Dr. I.D.E. Thomas.
Wow.
He was the same age as my father. Wow. So he was like my second mentor in many ways. That book, The Nephilim, The Omega Conspiracy, he talked about what the Nephilim were, and it connected all the dots. Because when I first read the Guidebook of the Supernatural for the first time, I was really ticked off. Because when you get to, I get ticked off a lot, I guess. When you get to the flood of Noah in the Guidebook of a Supernatural, i.e. the Bible, right? All of a sudden you kind of go, wait a minute. So let me get this straight. This loving, holy God is going to destroy the entire earth except for 8 people? It's like, no, wait a minute. I can't buy this. What are you doing here? This makes no sense. I don't understand. But okay. And so you go a couple of chapters later and you get to the Tower of Babel. And you go, wait a minute. You know, why is he doing this? Why confuse everybody's language? You know, what's the point? I mean, what did these people do that was so wrong? That was so weird that he has to wipe them all out in the flood and then confuse all the languages. Time out. And then you go to the Sodom and Gomorrah, and that's it. I take the book and I'm ready to throw it against the wall. I don't understand this. This doesn't make any sense to me. There seems to be the God of the Old Testament, which is this pernicious, maniacal, crazed, genocidal God. You know, and then you get Jesus. It's like, not buying it at all. And so this book explained it all. This book explained it all. Because until a person understands Genesis 3:15, the seed war, this is where we are living. We are living in the war. The war is all around us. It's manifesting in ways that I've never seen. We are living in unprecedented times. Genesis 3:15 sets up the rest of the guidebook to the supernatural, sets up the rest of it. There's this little vignette. You got the pre-incarnate Jesus. You got Adam and Eve over here, and you got the dragon. Adam and Eve have just eaten something. Their DNA has changed. That's why they're in a fallen state. It's changed, radically changed your DNA. Now, that's not written in the book. That's conjecture on my part. But something happened radically to them because they radically changed, and they no longer can have that type of fellowship. Jesus says to the dragon, your seed, your offspring, you're talking of a dragon, your seed, your offspring will be at war at enmity with the offspring, the seed of the woman. The one coming from the woman, the seed of the woman, will crush your head. You'll bruise his heel. That's the whole deal. That's everything right there. If we understand that, then when we get to Genesis 6, where the sons of God saw the daughters of men, right, and went into them and had children by them, and when Nephilim were on the earth in those days, and after also afterwards, when the sons of God took wives and had children by them, these great men of renown, that's the reason for the flood, because the seed war is happening in Genesis 6. The fallen angels come down on Mount Hermon, 200 watcher angels. Shemyaza is the leader, and he says, I fear you will indeed agree not to do this thing, and I alone will bear the penalty of this great sin. And this is where the book, the countermove came from, because it explains the countermove, the move, countermove, all throughout the guidebook of the supernatural. So they come down, they take the women, they create these hybrid entities known as the Nephilim. This is why the judgment happens. And it's not a weekend frat party. This goes on for 400 years. This goes on for about 400 years. Some people believe even longer. So everything becomes contaminated genetically. Why? Because the seed of the dragon is corrupting the seed, or trying to corrupt the seed of the woman. Eight people, that's it. And once you cipher that into the equation, you go, oh my gosh, he let it go right down to the wire. Right down to the wire, only eight people. Because it says, and this is the deal, once we understand that, when you get to a scripture that says, but Noah was pure in all his generations. Well, what the heck does that mean? Who cares? Well, you really care if you know about the seed war, and you know that there's genetic manipulation going on, and people are no longer human. They're no longer human. And so that sets up the rest of the deal. So then when you get to the Tower of Babel, you realize that Nimrod is trying to become Geborim, which is another word for Nephilim, through ritual sex magic. What the heck do you think Aleister Crowley was doing? It's all like this. Once you know, then you know. And it's like a set of dominoes. Everything just goes down. Then when you get to Sodom and Gomorrah, you realize that, guess what? That was the same thing was going on in Sodom and Gomorrah. That's why the judgment. Move, countermove. And the protocols are such that the Most High God, El Shaddai, allows it to go on. When he says to Abraham, hey, Abe, you know, you're going to have a son this time next year. Abraham goes, wait a minute, I'm 94 years old. How's that going to happen? And Sarah's laughing because she goes, there's no way. You know, women, you know, once you go in the menopause, God bless you. Once you go in the menopause, I mean, that's it. You're incapable of bearing children anymore. So Sarah's laughing because she's going, that's not going to happen. Of course, a year later, something happens. I believe, and Chuck Missler talked about this years ago. I believe both Abraham and Sarah, both Abraham and Sarah was somehow regenerated. They were taken back into their youth. It's just like, you know, how does that work? How does that work? Because when Abraham and Sarah go down to Egypt because of the famine, Pharaoh takes her as a wife. Well, you don't take a 94-year-old woman as your wife. I mean, you just don't do that. But you'll take someone who looks like they're 20 or 25 and are very beautiful. Something, and it's there in the text. But you've got to, Chuck Missler was the first person I know of that expounded on that. He believed, as I do, that Abraham and Sarah were regenerated. So you get this tapping out of where the one who will crush the dragon's head, where the line is going to come from. And that's from there on in, it's off to the races.
I think she was altered supernaturally. Yeah, she had to be.
Yeah, it's utterly supernatural. The whole book is supernatural. Because we live in a supernatural world that surrounds us, and sometimes it manifests, you know, in ways that very dramatic. Obviously, someone who's demon possessed or opening up a gateway, and all this crap is coming out. But at the same time, you know, I do a show called Supernatural Confrontations, and people write in with their supernatural experience, and a lot of times it's like angels unawares, which is so cool. I'll just give you one example. So this woman, she's about 21 at the time this happens. She's a brand new Christian, and she goes to a midweek Bible study, all right? So Wednesday night, she gets done at 9 o'clock. It's winter time or the late fall, and she's driving home, and she runs out of gas. And she's not on a main thoroughfare. She's on this country road, two-lane country road, no street lights, no houses, nobody around. And she just sits in the car, and she starts crying. I mean, I get that. You know, no cell phones. This is the days before cell phones. So this is decades ago. No cell phones, two-lane country road. It's all dark. All of a sudden, there's a knock on the window. I just ding, 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 ding. There's a knock on the window. And there's this handsome young man with a can of gas, a 1 gallon can of gas. And he goes, "Are you okay?" She goes, "No, I'm all out of gas." He goes, "Well, here, let me fill you up." So she's kind of, you know, looking at this 1 gallon can. So he pours the gallon can in, and the needle goes full like this. And he just, when she looks back, he's gone. He's just totally gone.
Love it.
So, you know, there's the good guys and there's the bad guys. So when the good guys show up, it's pretty cool.
That tells us that we are never alone.
No, we're not.
Go ahead, Nori.
Oh, sorry. What do you think, if anything, we can do? Right, because there's all this talk about if you raise your vibration, you're going to, you know, be in higher consciousness and closer to God. What's your thoughts on all that?
I think it's a bunch of hooey. I mean, I can't raise diddly squat. I mean, I tried it in ashram for 3 years. Now, there are mystics, Hindu mystics, but there's a price. They've tapped into something. There's no doubt about it. But what have they tapped into? The same thing in all the shamans all around the planet, whether you're in Africa or Australia, you're all tapping into the lower astral. And that's the denizens of the dark world. You don't want to go there, but there's power there. And the dragon can give you the power. What being born again and spirit filled is when we invite him in. And again, there's that threshold covenant. You got to invite him. When you invite him in, just like I did 42 years ago, it'd be 43 years in 2023, he changes everything. He initiates everything. And so it's amazing because I remember my first mentor, Wayne Kendall. I go, "Wayne, what's going on with me?" And he goes, well, L.A., you're being rewired. You're being rewired.
What is that, L.A.?
You're being rewired.
Well, what is it that you said, a mentor, Wayne Kendall?
His name was Wayne Kendall. He was a mentor to me, my first mentor.
Oh, mentor. Wayne Kendall.
Mentor, yeah. And he was, you know, "Wayne, what's going on?" He goes, well, Marzilli," he used to call me Marzilli. "Well, Marzilli, you're just being rewired. You know, you've had this thought pattern for so long, and the Most High God is kind of changing that thought pattern a little, moving some wires around, and it takes time. It takes time. There's a phrase I came up with years ago that really, in order to be used, a man or a woman spends a good amount of time on the anvil, on the forge of a living God. That's what has to happen. And it's painful. It's not a fun and games deal, but the end results is incredible because he's taking the soulish nature and reshaping that now because the spirit is finally activated. And that this, because the soul can be, I can't change myself. I mean, I can try. That's the whole miracle of people going to AA. they realize, I can't control this. I can't do it. But they go to AA, and they've just taken all the nonsense out of it. Just believe in something that's higher, whatever it is. And so, you know, the guy upstairs acknowledges that and allows that. And a lot of times people through AA come to a faith in the Messiah because they realize who's behind it. But that's where the miracle happens. I'll tell you a story. A friend of mine was a crack addict, been a crack addict for like, you know, over a decade. Just, you know, crack and meth.
A lot of people are thinking of the giants of the past being synonymous with the Nephilim. What is your, what have your research brought up about that?
Well, absolutely. The research with the Nephilim, they were the giants. The giants, the Nephilim are the byproduct, the offspring of the fallen watcher angels and the women of Earth. And when you say angel, I mean, people go, angel, it just means messenger, but they're watchers. They're really powerful. They're really intense. They can manipulate space, time, matter, and energy. These are unbelievable, powerful beings, but they're in a fallen state. And they take the women and they create this hybrid being known as the Nephilim, and they were giants. They were also cannibalistic and sexually deviant, just like they were then, just like they were at the time of Noah. And after that, when Joshua and Caleb go into the promised land, just like they were over here in the Americas. When I discovered that 9-foot giant out in Catalina Island, that thing went viral. I'll show you the picture. I mean, that thing went absolutely viral. And here's a shot.
The giants have been in the Americas until very recent, because even Joseph Smith, he said in his annals that when he walked across the United States or America at the time, he ran into giants.
Oh yeah, they were there, and all the Native Americans and all their. This is the original picture I found in the Catalina Island Museum, and wow. You can see Ralph Glidden, and in front of him is a very large guy.
Yeah.
So when you take that and you bring it up, this is what you get. He's almost a 9-footer.
Wow. Yeah.
He's a good basketball player.
They were here, and the vestiges of them are all over the Americas, all over the earth. That's why I'm on the trail.
Where did they go? Well,
many of them, and that, see, this is where it really gets cool, because we don't know, and nobody knows. Let me give you an example. In Peru is a city called Corral. It's the oldest city in the Americas. I've been there 3 or 4 times. Fascinating city. From the city, there's this, it's built on an 18 and a half year Masonic cycle. It's got step pyramids. It has a flat plaza. It's got this sacred area, which looks exactly like the kivas in Chaco Canyon. Almost exactly like the kivas in Chaco Canyon. They're separated by, you know, thousands of miles and thousands of years, okay? There's no, remember Brian Forrester taught me about this. There's no pre-existing culture here. This whole thing, Corral, just rises up out of nowhere. All of a sudden they're building step pyramids. They, you know about the solstices. They're doing all the stuff. It's geometry, it's advanced building techniques. It's knowledge of the solar precession, equinoxes, solstices. It's engineering, it's all there. Because there's no pre-existing culture which goes, well, I think we should make a monument. What should we do? Well, let's make it a pyramid. What's a pyramid? I don't know. It's all there. And guess what? They all disappear. They all just disappear. And no one knows where they go. And so archaeologist goes, well, there must have been a climate change thing here. And they just assimilated back into the indigenous population. No, quit lying to me. Stop it. Just be honest and say, we don't know what happened to them. Now travel thousands of miles to a place in Newark, Ohio, the Great Circle Mound, the Octagon Mound. The Great Circle Mound is over 1,200 feet in diameter. The Octagon Mound encompasses 50 acres of land, 50 acres. And it's an unequal octagon. Okay, two of the sides are not equal. So it's not 8 equal sides. Two of the sides are unequal. So we're looking at advanced geometry, and it encompasses 50 acres. How do you check your work? And the archaeological record in Ohio, there are no surveying tools. You know, if Native Americans did this, surely the sacred buffalo hide that shows this octagon has to be drawn somewhere, because in order to make anything, you know, you got to have a plan. So I'll just show you what I'm talking about. So here's an octagon. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. A very crude octagon, mind you. It's got 8 sides. In order to draw a real octagon, you've got to know geometry. You've got to have a protractor, a ruler. And if I did this, I need to know the angles. And I need to duplicate those angles and make every side equal. Okay, that's geometry. But when I take two of the sides and make them unequal, now I'm at advanced geometry. And when I'm creating this whole complex of the octagon mound and the circle mound, which is adjacent to it, they're connected. When you stand back at the octagon mound and you look out and you see the circle mound, the lunar standstill, here's the moon, right? So this is my observation point. So at 18 and a half year lunar cycles, you will see the lunar standstill dead center. And then it goes back up like this. So you see the lunar standstill like this. There it is. The moon comes down and it sits right when you're on the observation deck in the octagon, looking through the channel to the circle mound. There's the moon at the lunar standstill. It happens in 2025 in Ohio. I hope to be there, God willing. Native Americans did not know about the 18 and a half year metonic cycle. They didn't know it. Stop lying to us. Stop it. Just stop it. We're so freaking sick of it. It's enough. It drives me cuckoo. It really does. Calm down, LA. Calm. Deep breaths. There you go. Let it in the good air. Much better. But it drives me nuts. And this is why. If all three of us right now beam down the earth 4,000 years ago, and we look at the moon and we go, wow, there's the moon over here. Okay? It rises here and it sets over here. Goodbye. And the next night it rises up a little closer over here and it sets further away over there. We're kind of going, wow, the moon's really kind of like a yo-yo going up and down. And, you know, what's going on with this thing? So we put a stake in the ground. We're going to get to the bottom of this, right? And we watch the moon come up and we put another stake here and then it sets and we put a stake there. We've got two stakes. We keep our center post right here. Don't move it. Next night we come up. Oh, there's the moon over there. And then we have four stakes. Next night we do another. There's the moon over there. And remember, it's a lot of work staying up watching what the moon does. And it sets over here. And we do this for like 20 days. And we're going, it's pretty cool. We got 20, you know, we got 40 stakes in the ground. But wait, all of a sudden a 3-day rainstorm comes in and it obfuscates the moon. You can't see the moon. And it rains and some of the stakes get worn off. And you sit there and you go, eh. So we know that it's an 18 and a half year metonic cycle, 18 and a half year lunar cycle. We know that. But we don't know what year we're in when we plop down on Earth. Is the moon in its fourth year of cycle? Its 10th year? Its 17th year? We have no idea. And then if you act, it's thousands of stakes in the ground, by the way. And then you've got to figure out somehow, wait a minute, we were here before, weren't we? We've seen this pattern before. Oh, really? Where is that? Oh, it's stake number 15 over here or whatever it is. How would you crunch the data? How would you crunch the data? And this is why it drives me nuts, because they insist that Native Americans did this, but Native Americans have no record of it at all. And you go back 4,000 years ago, they try to push the date of the octagon mound more like 2,000 years, but the work of Howard Crowhurst, which was just incredible, when you actually look at the lunar standstill, it goes back 4,000 years. And now we're looking, and this is why it's a hidden history, literally obfuscated.
Yeah.
The Native Americans would have had a hide, there was something to create this. There's no tools at all in the archaeological record which would assist them in building the octagon mound. You're looking at advanced geometry.
Yeah, speaking of hidden history, there's something that has become very popular to talk about for the last year or so, and that is Tartaria. What is your take on that? It seems to me like that is kind of like almost like a hidden society that has just gone away. What do you know about that?
Not much, but I will tell you this, that that's what we see over and over again. It's like the ancient megaliths all throughout Europe, into England, Stonehenge, Salisbury, Avesbury. I mean, the Long Barrows. I've been there, I filmed there. It's mind-boggling. And no one knows who built it. It's just like, now they're always reworking Stonehenge. Well, we really don't know who built it, right? But obviously, the blue stones came from somewhere. I mean, thousands of miles away, hundreds of miles away. And here we go. It's just tragic, freaking batty. The
You
thing,
speak about
the thing. Go ahead.
another thing. Yeah, you speak about another thing also, the coming deception. Could
Ooh.
that be related to maybe something like Operation Bluebeam with the faked alien invasion?
Well, I don't think it's a fake alien invasion. And the fact that we all know about Bluebeam and it's a fake alien invasion, it kind of pulls the covers off of that, doesn't it? It's like, well, somehow it got leaked out. I guess he won't be doing a fake alien invasion because we've all heard it. You just kind of go, oh, there's Bluebeam. Ah, nothing to worry about. What's for dinner, honey? I mean, there you go. So, the late David Flynn, who I've been quoting a lot recently because people ask me about this, he believed, as I do, that there would be some sort of a nuclear event on the planet which would then trigger their coming. Guess what happened today? Russia fired two rockets into Poland and killed two people.
They fired them where?
Into Poland.
Poland.
Yeah, Poland. Just happened today.
Oh.
Exactly. And
That's not good.
what have both sides been doing? Saber rattling with what? Nukes.
Yeah.
This is where we are. This is why it's unprecedented. And God forbid it ever happens. But if it happens, they'll show up, mile-wide craft, the entire planet. It'll be like, remember when COVID hit? Everything shut down. The grid, all the grid, everybody talked about was COVID, 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 COVID. Now, is this going to be on YouTube? Okay, so
Yeah.
we won't say anything more about that.
Yeah.
But
Just
that's
talking
true.
slow. Yeah.
It's all we'll
Yeah.
say. We won't go into COVID, but it happened. But the media, everything was shut down. Everything was focused on COVID. That was
Yep.
it. And they
It's
show
all
up
mainstream.
with a mile wide craft over, Ukraine, Paris, Moscow, DC, wherever, Walla Walla, Michigan. Everything stops. The entire planet stops. The grid lights up. All we do is look at this, and
Right.
people weigh in on it and talk about it. That's it. It's the mega lever. It changes everything. It changes everything. The neo-Darwinists are going, hooray, we're not alone. Yay. And we were seeded here. When they show up, they will tell us that they created all life on this planet. They seeded early man here. They started the world's religions. They genetically manipulated us. They started the world's civilizations. Now at this critical juncture, because of the nuke, they're back to usher mankind into a golden age of peace and prosperity.
How do you feel
I
about
think
that? What are your thoughts about that?
it's absolute rubbish. That's the coming great deception, in my opinion. And I've been banging on this drum for like 30 years. This is the coming great deception. This is it. Because they didn't create us. They didn't create us. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. He was with God in the beginning. All things were created by him and for him, and without him was not anything made that was made. So we can believe that, or we can believe the nonsense. I loved it when Ben Stein sits down with Richard Dawkins and he goes, well, how do you think life began? Where did the first self-replicating molecule come from? And Dawkins gets all kind of effete. Well, no one knows. Well, how do you think it could have happened? That's an intellectual lifeline. Well, I suppose it could have happened something like this. Far, far away in another galaxy, a race of extraterrestrials must have somehow evolved by some sort of Darwin evolution and seeded us here. He's all happy about that. Well, that's circular reasoning. Who created them? Where did they come from? It's a
Yeah, you can go
mystery.
back on.
Yeah. It's a mystery. And that's why I believe, you know, in the guidebook of a supernatural, because it tells us exactly, you know, who created us and why and where and where we are and what the protocols are. And we find ourselves in this war. And in 2 Thessalonians, it also says, because, you know, the Most High God, El Shaddai, sends them strong delusion. In other words, allows the delusion to happen because they did not believe the truth. What is the truth? We just stated that Yeshua, Jesus, created all things. He spoke everything into existence. And without him was not anything made that was made. We can believe that, or we can believe Darwinism. Well, no, Darwinism is like some guy just made this up, for crying out loud. You could say, well, someone just made up the Bible. I get that. But the prophecies in the Bible, the thread of prophecy from Genesis to Revelation, say, wait a second, someone is outside space and time calling out events with great specificity. And then, of course, when that personal relationship happens with, then everything changes. Then everything changes. Mm-hmm. And the cool news is it's free. I mean, go figure, right? The best thing is free. It's totally free. And you don't have to join a club, you know, it's like, or pay $50 a month to do it.
Yeah. And in your books also, there's one where you talk about UFOs and the physical evidence. Maybe now that's going to be an interesting book. So talk a little bit about that.
Well, not only in the book, but in the films that we do. I mean, the physical evidence is overwhelming, specifically with the implant that we took out from Emil, patient 17. And in my new film, On Abductions, that Emil comes back on the record, you know, years later. And now his face isn't, you know, all pixelated. We know his real name, and it's Emil. And he tells us there are four people that come in on this new film. Two men, two women. They've all been taken. They've all been abducted numerous times. The women have had children by them. And the children are always taken in the third month of pregnancy, always. The men have sperm taken from them. And what happens is just, that's the whole film. It's On Abduction. And there's no other film like it. There's no other film like it. But Emil was taken at 5 years old and implanted. Well, we took him and we did all the protocols that the late Dr. Roger Lear had set in place. He had x-rays and CAT scans and Gauss meter tests. There was, you know, there was an implant. We saw it. We took him to Dr. Matriciana for a pre-op. He found the implant in 2 minutes on the ultrasound machine. The day of the ultrasound machine, high strangeness occurred. We couldn't find it. For an hour and 20 minutes, we couldn't find it. So when I'm speaking at New Age circles, I will say this. My spirit guide tapped me on the shoulder and said, you need to take authority over this, because that's a language that people from a New Age will understand. But my spirit guide is not what you think it is. My spirit guide is the spirit of a living God. So he taps me on the shoulder and he goes, you need to take authority over this and do it now. I'm in a room full of unbelievers. We can't find the implant. And out loud, I say, hey guys, this might sound really weird, but I'm going to pray and I'm going to do it now. And I just said, Father, if there are forces that are cloaking this device, I pray that you would break their power and do it soon. Well, guess what? 2 minutes later, there's like a nervousness in the room. Right. Like LA's just flipped out, right? All of a sudden, from the back of the screen, it's like this. This thing just comes out of nowhere, like this. And there's the implant. Everybody goes, oh my gosh, what's that? And Matriciana goes, that's the implant. And he's got his wand, his ultrasound wand in his hand, right? And he's tapping it, looking at it like this, and he puts it back down on the leg. And sure enough, there's the implant. And he looks at it and taps it again. Can't figure out why it's working all of a sudden. And does this like 3 or 4 times. The moment was not lost in anyone in that room. I mean, it's one of those times where, you know, spiritual warfare. Not me. Nothing I got. But he dispatched a couple of guys and they broke that power and did it immediately. And that implant showed up and we removed it. That's physical evidence.
When you removed it, what did it look like?
It looked like about the size of a grain of rice. We actually took it into SEAL lab and put it under a scanning electron microscope and looked at it. there's like little nerve ending things which come out of it, which enable it to hook into the nervous system, not the circulatory system. But we think it engages and links up with the nervous system. So it's pretty amazing, pretty amazing.
We have 5 minutes left, LA. How can people find your books? How can people find your films?
Go to lamarzulli.net. Everything is right there. lamarzulli.net. You can also download them if you're across the pond, as it were, by going to streaming.lamarzulli.net. Streaming.lamarzulli.net. And I pray that you would do that and that you would find it interesting, because it really all the films, all the books give us insight into what's really going on, in my opinion.
Yeah, go ahead and just kind of roam around that website a little bit, folks, because there is pearls in there. And
thank you.
There depends on what your interests are. It's if it's in the UFO area, you get your mind blown. And if it's in the any other area that he talks about, he's got the evidence. It's not just theory here, because it's pictures and there is testimonies from people. And I got stuck on there. I couldn't get off the website for a while.
Thank you.
It was pretty good, yeah. And now I know we're getting down to the close here, but what is next for you now beyond what you're doing now?
Well, we've got, I'll be over in Manchester, England, for the UFO conference there in August. And I'm really proud that they invited me. I know Eric von Daniken is the lead speaker. So just to share the stage, of course, I'll bring my paradigm in that these are not extraterrestrials. These are interdimensional entities. And that's always interesting when people hear that for the first time. But that's what I believe that they are. And I'll be over there. And from there, we're going to a couple of sites, and we will be filming, not in the UK, other places. I'll just leave it at that. And then I'm doing an Israel tour 2023 in October, leading the Amatril of a Nephilim tour in Israel. You can go to my website if you're interested in that. Sign up for that. We go to Mount Hermon, Gilgal Raphaim, Tel Gezer, the huge megaliths underneath the Temple Mount, all the domens out throughout Israel. Those are the places we visit. It's unlike any ever tour, and that's coming also in October. So my calendar's filling up rather quickly, and I've, at 72 years old, I'm being more selective as to where I go, because there's only so much time. But we've got two major film projects already planned for this year, and of course we've got hours and hours and hours of film which we're trying to edit. That's why the abduction film will come out. After that, we're into crop circles, cattle mutilations. We're working on number 8 of the Amatril of a Nephilim series, which will be on out of place artifacts. So, we're working like crazy here.
Wow. Well, there's no lazy time for you, that's for sure.
When do you
take time out for yourself and just do something that will be fun and maybe off to the side of your work? Do you do much of that?
I try to. We're into the ski season, and in the Santa Monica Mountains, an hour and 40 minutes away, is a little resort called Mountain High, and it will be open again this Friday, and I might jet up there for like a half a day of skiing. In February, we'll take a vacation, and we'll go up to this one particular resort, Mammoth Mountain, and we'll take a full 10 days there and just ski. Now, before I do that, I've got to get all my shows lined up for YouTube. Got to do 10 shows, but that's, that we can do that without any problem, and we'll do that. But that's, the switch goes off. I got 10 days of skiing. Snow skiing is my favorite thing to do. And, I still can ski at 72. So I'm really proud of that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, skiing is fun. I grew up with skis back in Norway. I got my first skis when I was 3 years old. So
there you go. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, I tell you, I have one favorite question that I ask a lot of guests, and you be the right one to make the answer. Here's the question. If you could talk to the whole world and the world is listening, what would you tell them?
I would tell them that we are in the end times, the last days, which were prophesied thousands of years ago in the guidebook of a supernatural, also known as the Bible, that the rider on the white horse, i.e. Jesus, will return with the armies of heaven. It's beyond science fiction. It's not a bunch of nonsense, because that thread of prophecy shows us from the book of Genesis to the book of Revelation that there is someone outside space-time that knows the end from the beginning and the beginning from the end, and calls it out with great and accurate specificity. And he's coming back, because the end game is afoot. The end game is about to happen. And it's the time of Jacob's trouble, the seven-year tribulation period. So wake up, folks. It's all there. And we're not talking religion. We're talking relationship with the true God, who will come in and fellowship with you and change your life.
There is a panel in one of the temples in Egypt. You may already know about this. I believe it is the one in Abydos, where it says that the God of the world will return, and then they have a time limit for it. And when they, I think it was Hoagland was involved with this, I believe him and others, they figured it out that it came to 2024, when they retraced the time. So let's see if that happens.
I would say that we're close, very close. Yeah. And there's a prophecy that says wars and rumors of wars, famines, pestilence, earthquakes in diverse places, and troublesome times. And that's exactly what we see. That's exactly what we see.
Yeah. Pretty much, right?
I really enjoyed you guys, and both of you are just, I'd love to come back on sometime.
Please. Oh, you we're holding to that one.
Definitely.
This will be fun, yeah. And there's so much more to talk about. You got books, and I mean, 13 books now. That's, there is more to talk about. So maybe give it a few months and a couple of months and come on back.
Love to.
Thanks, that'd be great.
Thank you. Bless you.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, guys. May the Lord bless you and keep you.
In the worlds of Spark,
thank you.
Be long and prosper.
Live long and prosper. Take care.
Good night.